Hi, I'm Chase Bunker, but you're not here for me. You're here for my guest. He is a four-time NHRA Funny Car Champion and named NHRA Driver of the Decade in the 2010s. You can see him at the Amley Motor Oil NHRA Gator Nationals March 6th through 8th at Gainesville Raceway. Tickets are on sale now. He is Matt Hagan. Matt, how are you?
Hey, brother. Thanks for having me on the show. We are glad to be here. It's sunny Florida, man. Like, this is so much nicer than at home in Virginia. You know, the weather is just amazing here. We've been here basically testing the last couple of days, making some runs, and getting ready for the weekend here at the Gator Nats.
Nice. I imagine that the weather in Virginia is just probably cold, horrible. Yeah. We only have two seasons here. It's hot and not as hot.
I could get used to that. I tell you what, I got a big farm back home. We got about like 3,000 acres and 1,800 head of cattle, and I've been feeding cows, and it's mud and rain and nasty and snow. And so coming here to sunny Florida is definitely a nice little treat.
Nice. First off, you drive cars at over 300 miles an hour. I asked a professional bull rider this, and I'll just ask you this as well. What the heck is wrong with you?
Well, there's a fine line between bravery and stupidity, and you don't know what side you're on some days, you know? So it's one of those things where, man, it's just adrenaline driven. It's so fun. And that's, I think that when, you know, you buy a GA ticket, you can come out to the NHRA drags, and every ticket's a pit pass, right? Mm-hmm. And the fans get to see that. They get to see, you know, the drivers, you know, going over 330 miles an hour. My teammate and my owner, Tony Stewart, he just went 340 yesterday, you know what
Jeez.
I mean? Yeah, so that, and but then on top of that, you get to get right into the pit. Every GA ticket's a pit pass, right? Like, so the guys get to watch some break the car apart and put everything back together, and you know, and all this happens under 30 minutes, right? And you drag it back up there and go another 340 miles an hour. So it's like sensory overload, and every organ in your body will shake, and you can feel the vibration. It's a shockwave that hits you. So, well, you know, when you tell somebody like, oh yeah, you can sit up in the stands and every organ in your body vibrates, it's crazy, right? Yeah, but it really does. Some seismologists came out to our one of our races, and it's a 2.3 on the Richter scale when two fuel cars leave the starting line. We pull 6 G's on a run, almost negative 7 G's when the parachutes come out. I look really young for a while, and I look really old when the parachutes come out. So I think, unfortunately, the old part's sticking too much. But it's one of those things where it's so intense. It's adrenaline driven, man.
Tell me, you could tell me what it feels like now, but also when you first broke 300, just driving over 300 miles an hour, what does that feel like?
Man, it's intense. You know, the thing about those cars is they never quit digging, right? Like, as long as you got your foot in the pedal, it's still pulling. And those things just never quit. You know, and everybody thinks that we see the most G-force at the hit of the throttle, but it's actually in the middle of the racetrack when the clutch is trying to lock up one-to-one to the rear end. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's trying to pick the front up out there. These things are making over 8,000, 10,000 pounds of downforce, and it's trying to pick the nose of the body up out there. And that's where my vision gets really blurry, is in the middle of the racetrack. And then once it goes one-to-one, you can start to see a little bit more in the finish line. You can pick it out, and the next thing you know, you're throwing the parachutes and trying to slow down and stop. And you know, to go 1,000 feet, it takes us a half a mile to slow down. So you know, it's incredible to see what these cars do. You're asking these parts and pieces to push the limit of things that they're not truly designed to do, and that's what these crew chiefs it's unreal to see what they can make these things do. You know, to go up there and to cover a football field in under a second, you know what I mean? It's just you don't want to blink because it's over with, you know what I mean?
Well, when you say your vision gets blurry, that has to be scary. It's like, okay, I can't see clearly. Also, I'm going over 300 miles an hour.
Yeah, you know, it goes back to that fine line between bravery and stupidity. But, you know, I've done this for 20 years now, you know, and it's just, there's something to be said about being able to say, hey, look, I've got the best group of guys around me. I've got the best parts and pieces, and I'm going to drag it up there, and I'm going to beat the person beside of me, you know. And I think that's, you know, it used to be about like, man, I'm going 300 and some miles an hour, and this car is so crazy to drive. And it's so fast, but now it's about the competition, you know, and wanting to be the best and be able to have 4 championships and 55 wins. And, you know, all the things that we've been able to accomplish over the small amount of time in this career has been unbelievable. But it comes back down to a great group of people around me, man. It takes a small village to do what we do. And as you can see, when you come out, there'll be like, Each team has 2 trailers. They got a support trailer and a regular trailer and 2 cars and all the parts and pieces and all the things. It takes $7,000 a run. Every time that you see it go down the racetrack, that it doesn't hurt anything, that it's just a normal run, it costs $7,000 in parts. So every time that 4 second runs, it's spent $7,000 just on parts and pieces. So I put that in perspective. That adds up really fast. So we can't do it without sponsors. Our sponsors, we can win every race in the championship, and without these great sponsors that we have out there, like Dodge and Johnson Horsepower Garage and American Rebel and all the folks that support what we do, Mobile One, we can't make the call. So like at the end of the day, we have to have great sponsors, we have to have great people, we have to have great parts and pieces, and then when it all comes together and you're able to win a championship, that's not something you can just buy. You know, I mean, I've raced with billionaires. You know, I mean, look at Alexis DeJoria. Sure, her family owns Paul Mitchell. Her dad, you know, is Paul Mitchell, and you know, they had Patron Tequila, and Johnny Gray. They had, you know, he was a multi-billionaire old catter, and you have the parts and the money and that stuff. But when you win, it's something no one can take away from you. It's something that you accomplish with a group of guys that that just very few can do out there. And I've been very, very blessed to have a great group. So when you watch it come together on Sunday and you turn four wind lights on and you get to raise that trophy up there in the winner's circle, it's pretty cool. And one of my first Gator National wins was here with Tony Stewart Racing. So it took me a while to win here at the Gators. But now that we've been winning, we've been clicking them off, and I'm just excited to be back out here, you know, have a chance to do it this weekend.
Speaking of winning, in 2023 – as I mentioned, you won a Funny Car Championship. You had to watch it from the sidelines.
Yeah.
Is it, first off, I imagine you probably were like nervous as all heck because this race determines whether or not you're a champion or not. Do you prefer to be on the sidelines to watch so you have like that immediate celebration, or do you prefer it's you, one other guy, if I win, I win it all? But I don't get to have the immediate celebration after, you know, slow my car down, or else, you know, I'll die.
Yeah, no, I'd rather be in the, you know, in the car, have my own fate in my hands. Being on the sideline is awful. I think, you know, you're just watching and hoping somebody messes up. That's not a great feeling either. You know, you want everyone to do well, but you want to do the best. And it's, you know, to have that fate in your hands. I've won them both ways, right? Like, I've won them being able to, you know, win that round and win the championship like that. And also been on the sideline watching, and you're hoping the guy goes out and you win the championship. So just very emotional, a roller coaster ride that we take every year. And I've been very, very blessed to be in that hunt for a championship pretty much my entire career. Like, we've always had a chance to win a championship. Last year we runnered up. You know, I feel like we could have really won the championship last year, but we weren't able to run the last race because of weather. It hadn't rained in California in 52 days, and we get there and it rains for a week straight, you know. So wasn't able to get that race in, and kind of they called the points the way they were. But you know, still had a shot at winning the whole thing. So every year I've been very, very blessed to be in that. But that's why I have gray hair on the side of my head, man. Like, it's very nerve-wracking. It's always adrenaline-driven, and you never know how it's going to go. Because the countdown, they reset the points through the last six races. So you could kill it all season long, and then they basically give you a little margin of advantage at the end of the last six races, and you have to really perform the last six races to be able to win a championship. And so you have to have your stuff together, the car dialed in, the guys doing what they're supposed to do, the parts and pieces working great, and it all comes down to those last six.
How long can you enjoy a championship until you have to go, well, I have to now focus on this one now, and, you know, that's in the past, this is now in the future? Like, almost like that 1-0 mentality.
Yeah, you get a month to really kind of like, you know, our season stops the middle of November, and we start, you know, a lot of times testing in February. So between that time, you're still trying to do things and you know, obviously hone your craft. You know, got new parts and pieces, valve train stuff, block stuff, cylinder head stuff. All the guys are working on stuff. We always usually roll out a brand new chassis every season. So it's one of those things where there's not a lot of downtime, right? And then our season's stretched out pretty long, so you're just right back in the grind. You're right back after everything. But it's you know, there's like no rest for the wicked, man. You know what I mean? You gotta just keep digging.
You mentioned training. How does one practice and train? Because I imagine, like, you know, with basketball players, they have a basketball court, and like players, like, they can practice drills. Like, I imagine, like, do you just like practice reflexes?
You try to get like a timing tree, and you can like see the light and you react to it, but there's not much you can do, man. I mean, there's no substitution for that car. You're sitting in the car and it's bouncing off the ground as each cylinder fires, and just the it's shaking, and the g-force and the fuel and the smell, and just, you know, there's no simulator for it, right? And there's no simulator for going 340 miles an hour and the g-force. I guess you could get on roller coasters or something like that and get yourself prepared a little bit, but it's just there's just, man, and the problem with it is like I said, it's $7,000 every time we make a run on a good run. You know, and so we don't get a lot of time to test because it's so expensive to test these cars. It's not like we can just take it over there and you know, like a circle track, and you're going to say, okay, well, we'll take a day and hot lap this thing and, you know, and get more experience. So And the guys have to break the car apart every run. So it's like, you know, you're lucky to get four runs in a day. So, you know, and that's what we usually do on a Sunday, you know, is four hits. But, you know, even during testing, you know, you still have to have time to process that information. So a lot of times, you know, we'll make a run early at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then you got a 11 o'clock and then a 2 o'clock, you know what I mean? So it's just like, it adds up and takes time. And then the crew chief has to go down and break through all that stuff to figure that out. So the testing side of stuff is really like, you get thrown to the wolves, man. Like you're in the hunt with it. You know what I mean? And yeah, you're just battling it out as the season goes. And a lot of times there's just not much time for testing. So, and on top of the expense.
What's been the scariest moment of your career?
Oh man, you know, obviously blowing up, hitting stuff, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I think the scariest parts for me is just letting my guys down, man. Like that, it's more scary to look at 10 guys that just are disappointed in you than it is to be on fire. You know what I mean? Like that's really what drives me as a competitor, to make sure that I come back and I do my job, and to make sure that I don't have to look those guys in the eyes and they'd be disappointed, because it's their bread and butter, and they, you know, they depend on me doing a good job out there, and you know, their bonus money and everything else that they get is how that car performs. And it's one of the most sickening feelings, and that you just can't take away. There's no like, oh, I'm sorry, that makes it better. There's no patting them on the back. It's like, hey man, they know you screwed up, you know you screwed up, and they're disappointed in you. So set me on fire every day, every run, you know, before I got to look my guys in the eyes and disappoint them for me doing something stupid out there and messing up on the racetrack.
You mentioned that you're a competitor. How competitive a person are you? Like, to the point of, like, what's the most childish game that, like, you will get, like, really competitive on? Or are you just, like, once you're off the track, you're just a laid-back person?
I mean, I think you got to be competitive with everything in life, you know what I'm saying? Like, whether it's business, relationships, just, you know, with your kids, everything. I mean, everything we do, we come out of our moms, you know, kicking and screaming, you know, trying to breathe, right? And and from there on, it's just like, you know, it's a competition in life. It's just, you know, how you position yourself, how you train yourself, the motivation and the determination and the discipline, I think that is really it takes to be at that level. And there's a lot of people that want to be there, but don't want to put in the work, you know what I mean? And that's another thing I think that people don't realize is that, you know, our sport is physical to some extent, but it's a lot of mental, and people don't know how to train their mind to be ready to handle pressure, to be able to rise to the occasion, to be able, a lot of people look at pressure as like, oh no, I don't want to mess up. But there's a lot of, like for me, you turn that into, hey, this is my opportunity. This is what I've waited for. This is how I'm going to rise to the occasion. This is why I'm going to cut a good light. This is my moment that I've been waiting for, you know, and you turn that into something that is super, super productive, super confident for yourself. And those wind lights come on and you see that happen and your mind, you just train your brain and your mindset to be able to rise to those occasions. And I think that makes you successful in your career, but you also use that in life and adapt that to your businesses. You adapt that to your relationships. You adapt that to your family and your children. And it carries over. So yeah, everybody gets up and they want to go to the gym and they want to eat right and they do all those kind of things, but you also have to work on your mental game too.
Yeah, I think it's, you've seen like I'll call them ill-informed people who would just be like, oh, drivers aren't athletes. And it's like, no, like that's preposterous. Like, because one, like it takes a lot of strength to just keep the steering wheel straight,
yeah,
especially at a high rate of
speed. Going on, yeah.
Well, also just like you have to be very quick on it. So like as soon as you hit, you see green, you just got to throttle it.
Yeah,
and so it's a matter of reflex as well.
So I think the biggest thing that's probably coming from someone that's never been at that level of competition or something that fast, and being able to make those decisions. Your mind slows things down for you when you call it, like, I guess, get in the zone, and you're able to make those decisions in fractions of a second that control the outcome of the race, whether, you know, you got to pedal the car, if it's smoking the tires, or you lifting, or how long you get to where you roll back in the throttle, your reaction times as far as leaving the starting line, all those things, on top of shutting the car down, different things like that. We're all doing that in under 4 seconds, you know, and if you're going over 300 miles an hour. So, I mean, maybe it's not as physical as going out here and getting in a cage and MMA fighting, but you have to train your brain, you have to train your body, you have to train your mind to do those things to handle those situations. And you asked me before, what's the scariest I've ever been? Well, I realize why people jump out of skyscrapers that are on fire. I've been so hot that I want out. I don't care how fast I'm running or what I'm doing. And the thought process that comes across your brain, like, I'm going to die. And I don't know if very many people have ever had that real thought come across their brain, like, I'm in a situation where I'm probably going to die, and I don't know how to get out of the situation. Well, then you start panicking, and then what happens is that you start hyperventilating, and then you start taking in more smoke, and then the situation gets worse. You can't see where you're at, and then trying to get the car stopped, and then you're so hot, you're starting to blister, and all your steam and the sweat on your body starts to blister, and next thing you know, you're ready to jump out of the car, and it's still probably running 200 miles an hour. all those things happen in such a small amount of time, you have to be mentally prepared to like, okay, now hold my breath. Now put the car up against the wall, slow some speed off of this thing, you know, get yourself in this situation. Or and then when you're getting out of the car, do you jump out, make sure you're getting out towards the wall and the safety guys don't run over top of you, jump out the wrong way. You know what I mean? Just there's so many things going on that I think that people have no idea. So to someone to say like, you don't have to be an athlete or you don't have to, they're foolish in that mindset of like, they're so simple minded that they're small box mentality, right? Like they don't think outside of the box, all the things that have to happen and all the things that have to come together to do that. But that's everybody's MO, man. Like, you know, everybody has different opinions and everybody sees things differently. But at the end of the day, I think when you break these things down, the things that we have to go through and the things that we're put through, I don't know how you couldn't be an athlete.
Yeah. Let's shift gears. And I don't mean to say that because you're a driver. I say that all the time.
No pun
I didn't
intended,
mean to do
right?
it.
Yeah.
I hate myself for saying it now. As you mentioned, you are a cattle farmer up in Virginia.
Yeah.
So I imagine you probably cook a good steak, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we definitely will throw some steak on the grill anytime we get a chance. And, you know, it's one of those things where been very blessed to live such a high adrenaline-filled lifestyle, but then be able to come back to the farm and turn all that off. You know, we got like 3,000 acres back in Virginia. We
nice.
Run about 1,800 head of cattle. And it's just it's being able to throw your phone in the truck and turn all that off and get on the tractor. There's always something that has to be done on the farm. I got three guys that just do a really great job. I get to play farmer when I get home. You know, they let me ride around on a tractor and like, oh, he's on his tractor. That's great. You know, but they're the ones really doing all the work. But it's just, it's one of those things where, you know, for me, I'm going to farm until the day I'm not physically able to. It's just something I truly enjoy. It's something about being in nature, planting crops, watching them grow, having cattle, watching them have calves, growing those cattle into what they are to be able to be sold to help, you know, for people to buy, to eat, to, you know, just to enjoy, you know. And it's just, it's a feeling of just the circle closes, man. Like, you know, it's all the way around it. And it's just, I don't know how to explain that other than it's just a wholesome, you know, spiritual feeling, you know, to be able to be a part of the land and be a part of something out there in nature and all that. And then you get on a plane and you come out here and you go 300 miles an hour and you're dealing with fans and adrenaline and everybody's drunk and they're happy and they're cheering you on or they're booing you or whatever it may be, you know, and to be able to go back home to that, it's really been that really peace of mind for me. And I guess that's probably why I don't see a therapist. I just go to the farm for a little while, but it's been a great, you know, yin and yang, I guess you would call it, you know, like the offset of that adrenaline that we do on the weekends.
How do you prepare your steak? Or what's the best method you would say when you prepare a steak?
Oh, man, preparing a steak, obviously, you want to braise it for a little bit, you know, like, you know, put it in the oven and let, like, those, especially those big, you know, those tomahawks and stuff like that, because they're so thick, right? Like,
yeah.
You want to kind of braise it in there, cook it a little bit, and then throw it on the grill there for a little while. But then you got to let it rest. I think everybody kind of forgets to let that meat rest a little bit. You know what I mean? Let those juices kind of flow out of them a little bit, and then you get in there. But like, obviously, lots of butter, lots of seasoning. You know, I'm a sweet tooth kind of guy too, man. Like, I'm a fat kid at heart. Well, I am a fat kid, period. You know what I mean? So everybody's like, how do you fit in your fire suit or that race car? And I was like, well, I eat a lot of steak and a lot of butter, man. I don't know. You know, it's just, I'm not going to change my ways. I'm just going to keep doing what we're doing, but it seems to be working. But I mean, there's so many things with steak that just, you know, there's the way that it's prepared, but obviously the way that cattle is raised. And I think that's where people forget when you don't buy from a local farmer, you know, that meat that you're putting on your plate has changed hands almost six times before it ever hits your dinner table.
Oof.
Right? So think about all the folks that have an opportunity to put hormones in it, antibiotics in it, all that different things. But when you go direct and buy from a local farmer, you know exactly what you're getting. A lot of times those guys will let you pick your cattle out and they'll finish them out, and then it goes right from one step from the farm to the processor to your plate. And I think a lot of people forget that. So I'm big about supporting the local farmers, you know, back home and what we do, but there's local farmers everywhere. And I think we're losing small farms so fast here in the United States. And it's just one of those things where I know we're here to talk about drag racing, but but it's something I think it needs to be addressed as well, because people, they need to know where their food comes from. And it's a big thing, man. So I'm glad to be a part of that as well.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you the same questions I like to ask all my guests here. They're inspired by the late, great James Lipton. Are you ready?
Are you ready? I'm ready, man.
All
I'm
right.
ready. Yeah. Let's do this.
I know you say you were talking about drag racing. These are completely different. All right.
Yeah.
What's the most played song on your playlist?
Oh, gosh. Probably on my playlist, it would probably be Ride the Lightning by Warren Zader. Yeah.
Guilty Pleasure Band.
AC/DC.
Favorite song you like to belt it out to, no matter how good or how bad you sound?
You Got That Love and Feeling. Is that Almonds Brothers or something like
that? I think so. Yeah. If you could eat one meal for a week, what is it?
Steak.
Mm. I should have known that. As soon as I asked that, I was like, of course it's steak. Drink of choice.
Drink of choice, tequila.
My man.
All right.
What kind of tequila do you prefer?
Oh, I like a Casamigo or a Don Julio. Mm-hmm. Blanco, though. Yeah, for me.
Yeah. Well, Blancos, I feel like, are really good for, like, mixing as well.
Yeah, yeah. Mix with a little Sprite, yeah. You know, something like that. A little sweet tooth, you know. Like I said, I'm a fat kid at heart. So.
I discovered Mi Campo is really,
really
good.
Yeah.
Really?
It's
like,
to try that.
It's only like a $30, like, tequila.
Oh,
as well.
I'm all in, man. Well, we're going to put that on the list.
We'll hopefully drink some this weekend.
There we go.
Favorite superhero?
Batman. Yeah. Where's the girl?
Where is he? Favorite internet video?
Anything like, you know, people hurting themselves. I'm like Three Stooges kind of guy. You know what I mean? Like, just definitely. I used to wake up when I was a little kid in, you know, middle of the night, and Three Stooges would be on, and my mom would catch me down there cackling, and she'd come whip me and put me back in bed. You know what I mean? So, I'm small, simple humor kind of guy.
Yeah. My sister and I used to watch Three Stooges as well. Whenever we would go to my grandparents, I used to watch them with my great grandmother as well. Really? Did you prefer it with Curly or Shemp?
Curly, man. I was Curly, yeah.
I think I'm one of the few people that was like, I think because Shemp was my original, one, and so that's how I got into them. What are you watching right now on your streaming platforms?
Oh, Silver. Yeah, it's just crazy. I've been like, you know, kind of invested in the market and different things like that, and I've been getting all my buddies into investing in Silver.
No, I meant like, what are you watching on like Prime or Netflix?
I thought you meant like YouTube.
I mean, good for you for investing in Silver. I mean, I didn't realize we're doing stock tips with Matt Hagen. Yeah. I mean, he's a stock car driver and a stock market driver.
I just watched this thing last night. It was called A Handsome Devil or something like that. This dude that killed some women, and it was like, I was like, oh man, I don't know, but anyway, he got him to pay him a bunch of money, so it was one of those wild, you know, killer shows or something like that.
All right, and finally, Matt Hagen, give me your spiciest hot take. It could be about anything in life.
Spiciest hot take. Oh man, I don't really have any spicy juice, man.
Like, you don't have any like spicy opinions where you're just like, oh, bananas are overrated, ketchup's not a condiment or something like that.
What are tomatoes, right? Are they a fruit or vegetable, man? I don't know. Like, I'm still trying to figure that out.
I think we can leave it. We can leave it at that. You can see him at the Amalie Motor Oil NHRA Gator Nationals March 6th through 8th at the Gainesville Raceway. Tickets are on sale now. Matt Hagen, good luck this weekend. Thanks a lot for coming
on. Best of silver. Thanks, man. I appreciate it, brother. No, I'm just playing. But thank you for having me. And wanted to say thank you to our fans. Everybody that buys a ticket obviously supports our sponsors, and we can't do it without our fans.